Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Canadian-born, New York City-based jazz guitarist Avi Granite. He opened up about his new album, In Good Hands, and with the support of the Canadian Council for the Arts, he recruited the talents of several of his musical mentors and friends. We get into this album and so much more. Enjoy.
Thank you for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, before we get into your album and your life and music, I want to know, you know, we've survived quite a time with COVID, especially the jazz community and musicians in general. So I'm curious,
how did you
survive that time period, and how did it subsequently change you now that you got new material and live shows are coming back?
I think like everybody else at the beginning, I thought things were going to be temporary. You know, I thought we went into lockdown in March. I'm in New York, and you know, I thought maybe in a month or so, everything would move on. And as it became clear that that wasn't in the cards, I started thinking, you know, what am I going to do? I used to, you know, a lot of people when I was coming up told me, you know, don't go into music, you're going to be broke. And I always thought, well, you know, a person who goes into the arts, you have a compulsion to do it. It's not like you're choosing something out of a jar or something. You know what I mean? So I always thought, no matter what, there will be a way for me to make some money playing. And in the past, when I've had hard times financially, I could always get a wedding gig or a few different kinds of corporate gigs or something to make some cash. But COVID really stopped all of that. It actually, you know, it's worse than a war because people still get married during wartime sometimes, you know. And so anyways, I started thinking about what kind of work I could do. And I used to work in warehouses. I used to do labor. I used to do all kinds of construction when I was in college and high school. And so I started thinking about all of that. And I stopped thinking about, you know, I know a lot of people took the time to like, oh, I'm going to practice more, or I'm going to write my magnum opus now, you know. And I kind of thought the world didn't need me to do more of the same that I had been doing previously. You know, it was like, seemed like a time of change and opportunity on some level. I kept trying to frame it as an opportunity instead of, you know, the destruction to my career and whatever else. I started studying different things. I started looking into other possibilities. The highest paying labor job I ever had was being a forklift driver for Coca-Cola. So I thought, well, I could probably go do that. But I remembered how miserable the older guys were that did that long term. And so I actually started studying programming. I started looking around at what I could do that would be, that would, you know, not be affected by this type of scenario, because I started to think after about 6 months of lockdown, or, you know, I started to think, well, I need something that's completely recession proof and completely this type of, you know, pandemic proof. So I looked to programming. I started thinking about programming, and I used to do a lot of commercial music as well, again, for financial reasons, and that really wasn't happening either. So there really weren't many options open to me. So I started researching programming, and I started thinking, you know, what could I do? And in the end, I thought, whatever I'll learn trying to learn to program, I'm sure if it didn't work out for me, I would have some kind of new skill that I could apply creatively on some level. But it turned out that I can kind of get into, you know, I love to problem solve, and I love chess. And even though I have approached my whole life artistically and coming from like a creative and improv standpoint, I admire logic. Like, I admire people who can think in really linear terms, and, you know, because it's something that I always thought was beyond me and outside of my sort of makeup. And so anyways, I started taking courses online, just like, you know, it was giving me something to hold on to. And I had a little bit of savings and thought, okay, well, let me give this a shot. And I did. And it kind of took with me. And I started doing a little freelancing programming on the side. And it looks like now I have a little side skill that's going to sort of supplement me in hard times in a kind of nicer way. than, you know, hustling for some kind of paying gig that's, you know, might be outside of my reach, depending on the situation.
That's really cool, man. Yeah, it's interesting because it seemed as though the jazz community really picked up a lot of production skills kind of because of this happening. You know, and I also, you know, recognize the right and left brain of things. By day, I'm an IT technician for a school district, so I've been in technology since the late 90s, and I get that. And some people are like, well, how can you think, because I do visual arts and writing and other things too.
Cool.
And it's like, how can you, you know, how do you do that most of the time, you know, being in IT, but you also do the creative, and it's like, you could teach your brain to do anything. It's a muscle, you know? It's like,
I mean, that's the thing, like, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're right. That's it. That's the point.
That's the thing. It's that, you know, I mean, every skill that I learned as a musician, really learning to, like, especially as I took on jazz and improvising and all that, and composing, of course, as well. Every time I found some new concept that was just beyond my reach or something that I thought sounded amazing, but I didn't understand, you know, I just have the personality of I'm a bit dogged. You know, I don't give up. And all the years of practicing and sort of trying to figure things out, it kind of made me feel like I could learn anything because, you know, these things really are like foreign concepts and you have to allow your brain. I think the process is that you allow your brain to sort of just kind of like soak it in without understanding what you're learning. And eventually, you know, the magic of the human mind is that we see patterns in things and we start to understand things. Even, you know, you could drop someone in a foreign land and they don't understand the language, but, you know, within a short while, they'll figure some of it out. And that's just the way we're designed. So I've always been into learning new things anyways. And I think it's been really empowering. I mean, I feel lucky that it actually turned into something. I was very much aware that I could be kind of wasting my time. But it seems like there's a huge demand. Obviously, everybody knows the whole world is data and programming and everything. And so I think that now I have this sort of side skill that's better than just driving a forklift. You know, I could do that also if I wanted to. But being a composer, you have to think in like certain kinds of overview terms. And I think that music, there's a lot of correlations between my skills as a musician and composer and what made it possible for me to sort of learn what I've learned and do the things that I've been doing with programming. And it's kind of like this uncharted territory for me as far as, you know, what that's going to mean in the future. I mean, I have all kinds of crazy creative ideas I'm looking forward to exploring. Now that I have sort of some new tools in my bag.
So let's get to the good news here of having a brand new album out in good hands. You know, the world's opening up, things we're slipping out of that COVID realm. Talk to me about not only how you put this album together, but how relieving it is to actually have this coming out coinciding with things opening up.
So the idea for the album came to me during the lockdown also. I was talking to and checking in with the guys. I have a long-running project in Toronto called the Ubby Granite Six, and I've kept it going even though I've been living in New York for 13 years. We tour and play together, whatever. And so I was checking in with those guys, just having video chats and stuff, and seeing that, you know, everybody had a sort of different reaction to what was going on with the lockdowns and how it was affecting their work and their lives. And I was reaching out to old mentors and people, you know, I just took it as an opportunity. You know what? We're all isolated. It's a great time to sort of reach out to people maybe you haven't talked to in a while or family or whatever. And so, you know, I talked to a ton of different musicians and I thought, you know, how can I get these guys some work? Because I was just like, my own problems were my own problems, but talking to people I really admire as artists and just human beings, and hearing their suffering through the situation, I started thinking, is there any kind of gig that I could set up that could work under these circumstances and whatnot? And I really didn't come up with a solution for that, but I did start thinking about how much I appreciated, my sort of mentors and musical friends in Toronto that I don't always get to interact with. And that really helped me to develop and shape myself as an artist in general. And so I started thinking about how much I admired each one of theirs playing and their influence on me. And I thought, you know, everyone's isolated. So then I thought, well, everyone's doing a ton of playing by themselves. You know, they're not just playing in bands. They're not just, it's not a run of a mill sort of situation. Everyone's doing it a little different now. And okay, we all practice alone a lot, but I thought that the lockdown would sort of create a different situation for, you know, where people were at with playing Oz solo instruments. And then I thought, you know, I would love to hear some of these people playing my music. And it just all kind of came together where I had the idea of, you know, these guys sound awesome in so many contexts that they've been recorded in. But, you know, if you know anything about mixing and mastering music, you know that one instrument kind of can mask another instrument's, you know, bottom end or top end or certain range of the instrument kind of gets lost to other instruments. For instance, like a guitar, when you play guitar by yourself, you might have a nice full tone going. But when you play in a band, it doesn't really make sense for you to have a lot of bass coming out of the amp because it's just going to get in the way of other instruments like the bass or the kick drum or whatever. So then I thought, well, when you record solo, you get this like really full picture, full bodied kind of sound. And not that many people, like how many great artists never recorded as solo instrumentalists? And all these thoughts sort of came together for me. And I started picturing, you know, who I would want to be involved and what songs. And I just started playing with the idea. And slowly, slowly, it seemed like a really cool prospect as a different type of album to listen to. I know a lot of people listen to music differently, but if you really want to sit down and listen, being able to check out guys like that are on the record, like Pat LaBarbera and all the guys, being able to hear them sort of isolated. I mean, not only would you appreciate their sound and ideas in a more sort of clear presentation, texturally, I got excited about it texturally, thinking about the album moving from one instrument to the next and how you don't get lulled into the kind of sound. And some people might like that. I mean, I know a lot of people listen to music very passively these days, like they're working or they just, when I talk to people, a lot of people say, oh, I just like it as background or whatever. But for the active listeners out there, hearing the like depth of texture and timbre and all of the qualities of an instrument in isolation, I thought it was a really unique kind of opportunity to check out these players. And as a listener going from track to track, I just thought it would keep your interest. And I think it turned out amazingly. Like, I'm thrilled about it. The way the album came out, the sound of it, the guys are all been super positive about it. And it's exciting to have a show coming up. You know, this Saturday, we've got our album release party in Toronto at the Jazz Bistro. And I'm not even playing on the record, you know, so I'm not going to play on the show either. I'm trying to just like honor these guys. And I should say that having at that point where I did figure out sort of this concept and started really fully forming the idea in my mind, I was like, I applied for a grant. I decided, you know, I could probably find a way to fund this, but it'd be even better if I could get some support so that we could do it properly and present it in a good way. And luckily for me, the Canada Council for the Arts decided to support the grant. So we were able to do pretty much what we wanted to do. And it is indeed very exciting for things to be opening up. And I'm excited for Saturday I'm going to be more of an MC I've kind of orchestrated out the night. Not everyone's going to be playing solos. There's going to be some different combinations and everything. But it is really exciting for things to be opening up again, for sure.
So how did this jazz journey begin for you? We always get seeds that are sprinkled in us from an early age. How did this all start for you? Who were some influences and how did the journey begin?
So I have a pretty funny jazz-like story in that I wasn't really exposed to it till I was about 18 years old. I was already a musician. I had studied classical music as a child. I played piano and then classical guitar. Eventually, by the time I was, you know, getting into high school, I was interested in all kinds of other music like metal and rock and grunge and rap and whatever else was happening. And at some point I really also was into like old school funk music and music from the 70s. And at some point, a friend of mine played the Miles Davis album Bitches Brew for me. I had never heard it, and it kind of, you know, I know it took a shellacking when it came out at the time, but I was hearing this in the like 90s or early 2000s. And so it kind of, I really liked the music because it was like funky, and I had already transitioned to mostly being interested in instrumental music. And I thought it just sounded cool and inventive and dark and mysterious and all of these things. And then somebody told me it was improvised, and my mind was just like completely blown. And I started looking into jazz music because I thought, well, you know, I could already solo a little bit as a guitar player, but the level of perception that is present in jazz solos or whatever was way beyond. And so I just started looking into that, like looking into the history just independently. Some of my friends were also into jazz, but I mean, I really just didn't understand the improv thing, and that was what really sparked my interest, because I had already thought, well, I love music and will always pursue it because it seems infinite to me. But then when you know, introduce the sort of wild card of improvisation and the universe that opens up, it just completely, like, the term really applies here. It really blew my mind. And I was hooked. I mean, I've never been much of a traditionalist, though with age I've gotten into playing a more traditional gigs and whatnot and really enjoying it. But yeah, I found a great guitar player in Toronto, this fusion guitar player, John Pelosi, that another friend of mine was studying with, and he introduced me to a lot of the stuff that really made a huge difference in my understanding of music. And it kind of blossomed from there. You know, I started to become aware of the guys around Toronto that were on the jazz scene, and like Pat LaBarbera and Ted Quinlan, who are on the album we're talking about. And I just go check them out. And, you know, it took me some time to adjust to it, but that's sort of how I got into it. And then I was at like a crossroads, just graduating from high school. I thought I was going to be a mechanic or an author of some kind. I liked writing. And then I got into school, but realized, you know, I don't really want to do this. So I took a year and practiced my butt off. And then I got into Humber. And then which is the like main jazz school around Toronto at the time. And that was the beginning of the journey of me kind of getting a chance to like play with a lot of other players and people. And I was already sessioning around my neighborhood in the suburbs of Toronto, had found a small pocket of other musicians around my age who were into this kind of thing. But yeah, it's not a very traditional story of how you come to jazz music, but it was very natural for me. One thing always led to the next, and I researched history, and I tried to understand the context and concepts that were at play, and I just got hooked. I started playing. I've always been a composer, but I got people together to play my music, and I haven't stopped doing that since.
So in this process of being a professional musician, what do you like about it the best? What is it that motivates you every day that you wake up and go about your day?
In general?
Well, in the context of being a musician, a creative force, what is it that you look forward to the most?
Honestly, I really like being alive. I really like nature. And I think humanity is hilarious, and I'm totally enamored by life. So, so pretty much every day I'm excited to see what I'm going to learn or find or experience. And the practice and sort of development of my playing and composing is all sort of very intertwined with just my day-to-day sort of self, like sense of self, and balance. You know, some people turn to religion for guidance when they have hard times and whatnot, but since I really started practicing music seriously, let's say in my late teens, I felt a connection to the universe that I didn't need someone else to explain to me. And it made me feel, you know, aligned on some level. And so I don't have a like end goal I'm trying to reach or anything. I just have this real compulsion to compose. And, you know, when you write music, sometimes I explain it like this, like when you explore a certain tonality or like you're playing a certain type of music, it's almost like you're emotionally swimming in a certain type of, you know, ocean or a certain type of feeling. And there's a real, like, I get a lot back from sort of exploring these things personally. So I'm not, I haven't had to turn to too many outside sources to find balance in my personal mental health or my sense of self. It's not really relying on other people's opinions, as much as it's important to me that, you know, I want people to enjoy my music. If people don't enjoy my music, that's not going to change how I feel about it, you know? And so there's a certain strength to that continues to push me forward as a player and as a composer to want to not only grow the possibilities of my playing, but to do a better job of relating the spiritual and creative ideas and feelings that I sort of experience as a player and composer.
So, you know, everyone out there has a perception of you, an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. What's your perception mm-hmm. of you? Who do you think you are?
Who do I think I am? I mean, I'm just me. You know, I'm not anybody else. I'm just me.
So let's get to the good business here of where everybody can either buy or download the album, or stream it, I should say. And, you know, your live shows coming up, any other live shows, anything going on in your world, where is the best place for them to go?
So a catch-all for all things I'm involved in would be my website, avigranite.com, or my label's website, which is, the label is called Pet Mantis Records. It's a .com, and you can find, you know, all my past work and some of my, you know, some other associated artists' work. For this album, it's going to be streaming starting Friday is the official release, on all the platforms and whatnot. The album is not actually for sale in any format until the springtime, at which point we're going to have a very limited run of vinyl available. If you go to the PetManisRecords.com website, you'll see the album and click through, and there's a page and there's an option to, you know, reserve a copy of the vinyl. And I've just yesterday put all the tracks that are actually on the album, they're on YouTube in live video format. So I recorded all the takes in the studio, and you can actually watch, you know, all these players recording their takes and hear the album audio on the YouTube channel. So that's, again, Pet Mantis Records. You'll be able to find it.
Beautiful. Hey, thank you for opening up. Thanks for taking some time out today to talk about your life project. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview. We give you a bit of insight into the finest players in Toronto, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Avi for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.